I'm Fathery.
This is Dave.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
Welcome to the 35th installment of the Text Trek podcast. Tonight, we are yet again talking about Star Trek Discovery.
Are we going to finally be done with Star Trek anytime soon?
Done with Star Trek anytime soon?
Yeah, we can move on to some other show or something.
No, it's kind of like what we do.
Oh, shit. Okay, well, proceed forward then.
with this exciting episode, episode 14 of season 1 of Star Trek Discovery, The War Without, The War Within.
We don't have a known quote for this one.
Yeah, that sounds like an original title.
Yeah, I think so. It's not as sexy as some of the others on a poetic level or anything like that, but it's still a good title. It's solid. It's solid.
Yeah, it's a story about war.
Yeah,
on an external and an internal.
There's
level.
Yeah. Arguably, there are warring feelings within Burnham and Ash Tyler and all these other people.
I'm still really loving the show, but I did have a few issues with this episode.
Now, before you speak to these issues, did you, going into this episode, I guess this is something I'm curious about in almost every episode, did it go the way you thought it was going to go? Do you feel like were there some surprises or not?
I would say there were some surprises. I, like you, don't watch the trailer each week. I do watch the short little clip they put in After Trek, but I tend to avoid the images that they release before the episode and stuff like that. I try to go into everything fresh. So I don't have too many set expectations, but on the other hand, I'm always kind of wondering and speculating about things.
Right.
And I kind of do kind of sometimes guess where the show is going.
There were some elements of, what happened, where they go with Emperor Georgia that I might have guessed some of the broad strokes with, but I did not guess what they were going to do. One interesting thing does seem to be that I was a little bit worried that they were going to immediately after having dimension hopped go to doing time travel stuff to undo this. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to figure out is within Trek canon, would it be if they subvert the Klingons after their very near victory or whatever, could that still fit within, historically what we know about the Klingon Federation War? And I'm getting the vibe that that's what they're going to do.
Yeah. But after they explain a few things in here, it does seem like it can fit. And I still liked this episode, but it didn't have that same feeling that the last few episodes, the Mirror Universe episodes...
Would be very hard to replicate the feeling the previous episode.
Yeah, because that was that's the best that the show has been and the best Star Trek has been in a long time.
You know what's weird is I don't know if I'd say it's the best the show has been. I thought it was a fantastically engaging action episode, but to me, in some ways, the actionness of it made it a little less Star Trek-y to me. Even though it had a great statement of purpose from Saru and all that stuff, it did feel like... I probably won't think of it... I may think of it among the most entertaining episodes, but not maybe personal favorites.
No, I would say that entire three-episode four-episode Mirror Universe
taken arc, as an arc.
Yeah, I really liked it.
I can agree with that. It will be an interesting challenge to have to think about this sometimes, this new series, more as arcs and less as individual episodes.
And I always disagree with people when they say that Star Trek's not very action-y, because it often, even though it is known for being more cerebral-type stories, it is very often married with action set pieces.
A lot of times you gotta have somebody's gotta get punched.
That goes all the way back to the original series when they would have fist fights in damn near every episode.
Right.
This is just big budget, high octane action.
Yeah. Yeah, they Next Generation reined those fisticuffs in a little bit.
You would still have, like, sometimes, like, yeah, some Klingons got to fight with Batwoths.
Yeah.
It was still a thing.
And Picard was, he could be two-fisted when he needed to be.
Sometimes, like, Riker has to go fight the Borg because Captain Picard is assimilated, and you got to have, like, a battle at the Borg cube.
Yep.
You know, it happens in Star Trek. But not so much in this episode. This wasn't a very action-heavy episode. This was a bit of
This is like the War Council episode.
Yeah. Well, this was a bottle episode, which is another thing they would do in Star Trek, where you'd have these big, high-budget episodes, and then after you spent all your money doing that, then you'd have to have a quieter episode where everyone just stays on the ship.
Yeah,
and you use only those sets.
I was fine with that, but one or two of the problems I had came from, like, it was almost like they talked about some things that were really interesting, but I felt like they were almost like one or two sins of omission. Like, I wanted to see this conversation happen and that conversation. But I'm going to wait until we're talking about the episode, and I'll just throw it in whenever I'm like, I feel like, oh yeah, this is the part where I would have dropped that conversation.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about it, just to recap the episode.
Yep.
It opens with the Discovery in the correct universe getting the I on the hull changed to a U, so that it will read USS Discovery again.
Right.
The ship has been damaged after it made its trip back to the Prime Universe through the mycelial network, and they're on auxiliary power.
And then no more mycelium.
Yeah, all the spores are gone, and they're trying to make contact with Starfleet. And things pick up where they left off with last week, with Emperor Georgiou of the Mirror Universe on the transporter pad of the Discovery with a gun pointed at Saru.
Yeah. It's just like immediately starts talking shit.
Yeah, about how he should be a slave or be
dinner. She was like, kneel. She's like, what are you doing? Kneel before me. And, like, Burnham's like, that's the captain.
Burnham's, like putting her gun. He's like, no, like, we don't do that here in this universe. We did have that conversation in the hallway between Burnham and Saru, where she's catching him up on everything that, you know, why she brought Georgiou back, why she just couldn't stand to watch her die again. And I loved that little conversation between Burnham and Saru. We've seen that relationship grow a lot over the course of the season.
Well, she as much as, interestingly, she confessed something that would have, I think she might have in the past times, would have felt like made her too weak before Saru, because she confessed she couldn't let her die again.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't think she would have been that open before. As a quick aside, I did feel that Saru, in that situation with Georgia, where she was, like, talking shit, did kind of get to assert himself, interestingly, when he's just like, beam her to the brig. They beamed her right out of the transporter room.
And that's an interesting point, is that he tells that transporter operator, you know, beam her straight to, well, not the brig, to guest quarters. And confine her there. And don't you dare breathe a word of this to anyone.
Yeah, he said consider it treasonous or whatever, if you do.
This is top secret at this point. Only three people on the Discovery know that she's on the ship.
Right.
And as Burnham is catching Saru up on, you know, what she's doing, Saru explains to her the situation with Ash Tyler.
Yep.
About how Laurel did her procedure. It appears that Vok has been deleted from Ash Tyler's brain. Mm-hmm. They weren't really sure what to make of the situation. And Saru asked her to go and see him in sickbay. But she...
Saru knows that they're close.
Yeah.
Everybody kind of knows at this point.
Yeah, it's a fairly small ship. Like,
Yeah.
People know. People talk. People gossip.
I don't know. Kelpian, he might not.
She didn't want to talk to him, though. She said, I can't do it.
Yeah. And that'll, of course, come back to be a thing throughout, you know, later on in the episode. But somewhat understandably, as she will later explain, she can't, despite her love for him before, she cannot just drop it and go back and make, you know, try and be there to comfort him yet.
But Saru does go to sickbay to talk to Ash, and he's still, you know, the first thing he asks about, you know, is Burnham okay? And he's...
By the way, for just a second, I thought he meant Laurel, and I was like, oh shit, fuck.
No, like, I don't know what they're doing with Vuk. I don't know if, like, he's gone, or I guess they would still have the option to bring that back, but...
So one of the conversations that I wanted, if not in this episode, then it may be in a previous one, like, when she did the procedure, is they, like... She, like, said, maybe I can help or whatever, and, like, Saru was just like, okay, just go do it. But, like, I never saw them say, what are you gonna do? Who's gonna be in charge when he's gonna come back? Where's Vuk gonna go if you delete Vuk, you know? Like, these are questions that they probably should have asked Laurel, and I understand you don't want to have a conversation on a dramatic show that's a lot of technical details about how a surgical procedure is going to happen, but I kind of wanted something, like... But
there could be a big surprise in the remaining episode that they don't want us to know about yet.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, you know, like, why would they trust Laurel to do this? Why wouldn't she just eliminate the Ash Tyler portion and have him be all Vuk all the time?
Yeah, and if, like, she couldn't do that, if that was just, like, technically not an option for her, then you should, like, explain, well, these are the rules. These are, like, the made-up fantasy science that we're using for this episode, and these are the rules of how it works, what you can do, what you can't do.
Right.
I mean, like, we've inferred that she deleted Vuk because she gives, like, the Klingon death cry.
Yeah.
But, Tyler does have Vuk's memories.
Right.
But he doesn't have the personality. So he remembers killing Dr. Culber. He remembers that Laurel and Vuk were in love, that he was supposed to take over the ship. And
he remembers that, yeah, that he was the first in a, like, a proposed sleeper agent program.
Yeah.
Which is an important thing to know and leads Saru to say, can you spill on everything you know? And he's like, yeah, of course.
Yeah, so they could always, you know, use that to be like, well, he knows a lot about, like, the Klingon ships, or, like, what different houses' motivations are.
Yeah.
Interesting thing about, he was the first in the, what do they call it? The, this, let me look here. The
Klingon body crushing into human progress.
Species reassignment.
Right.
Now, we do see some species reassignment later in, or chronologically later, in the Trouble with Tribbles, which would take place, right, like, 11 or 12 years after this.
Yeah.
But in that episode, Dr. McCoy is able to identify the man as a Klingon by scanning him with a medical tricorder.
Right.
So if
But it does seem like maybe you have to kind of look for it.
Well, yeah, because they didn't know until, like, the Tribble squealed at the guy. But that makes sense that, like, okay, if Starfleet knows that Klingons can do this, they need to be able to, like, scan for this. And so 11 years later, that's the a doctor with a medical tricorder can find one of these Klingons if he knows the test for it.
Yep.
I think the actual line that McCoy gives is, his body temperature is all wrong. Jim, this man is a Klingon.
Yeah.
But maybe that's, like on a super, like, certain organs are, like, off by, like, a few degrees, and, like, that's the only way to tell, or something like that.
Right.
But
he's got Klingon dog tags in his tummy, Jim.
But, yeah, so Tyler gives an interesting description of what it was like. Like, he remembers, like, Vuk being basically, like, tortured to be transformed into a human. And
yeah, they make it sound like it had to be done without any, like, anesthesia or anything like that. Yeah, like, painful. If you're going to, like, yeah, break my ribs and compact this and cut my heart up and stuff, they saw the fingers down and stuff, I'm like, you could probably put him out for that. But I guess for the Klingons, it's a show of strength. You know,
yeah,
you
maybe.
Like, no anesthesia. I'll take the surgery.
So Ash is basically on, like, house arrest. He's able to walk about the ship, but he has, like, some restrictions. They put, like, a little security bracelet on him. Mm-hmm. And then Saru reports to the bridge. They finally make contact with a Starfleet ship, and Admiral Cornwell beams aboard with Sarek and a whole bunch of security guys.
Yeah, that Andorian guy was all like, try me. He was like, try me.
Yeah, he's like one of these, like, asshole cops that are, like, just, like,
looking, like, to lure the power.
Yeah, they're just, like, just ready for someone to slip up so they can, like, exhibit some authority.
Yep. But it was nice. It was like a little throwback to Enterprise and their aggressive Andorians.
Yeah, the prickly Andorians.
Yep. But also, by the way, this was clearly a... All right, if viewers felt like there had been a little too much chat, then we're not going to do the, well, we're going to have them beamed over, long conversation on a view screen.
Yeah, on like a Skype call.
Yeah, like the Admiral just beams right onto the bridge before they can get their shields up.
And she says, where the hell is Lorca?
Yeah.
Because we were expecting some intel on detecting cloak ships 9 months ago that could have really helped. Because now the Klingons have destroyed, what was it, two-thirds of our ships. They've taken over 20% of the Federation.
Yeah. And they keep on, they're, tearing up planets. And then they move things forward very quickly with the clever device of Sarek, who walks over and is like, my mind to your mind, Vulcan mind melts with Saru and gets the whole info dump of what's been going on all in once. Incidentally, one other minor complaint about it, it's not too big a problem. I understand it's just kind of the direction of the show. Sarek being this involved in Federation matters, where it seems like he's kind of one of the big guys in the Federation, charting their course, did feel a little weird.
Has that always been his role, though?
I mean, he's an ambassador, but I've never seen him,
In Journey to Babel, he's, voting on if planets can come into the Federation, and then, Star Trek IV, he seems to be, really prominent in, the Federation Council, or...
It's weird to see him as active in this, where he's, hanging out with them constant, kind of seems more constantly involved. But part of that is also just remembering his mirror universe version was involved with the Rebels, but that's not really regular Sarek. It's just felt a little bit weird. He seemed to always be, in the original series, a little more contemptuous, honestly.
Well, we only see
him. He would be more distanced and, wanting to take a thoughtful review of the events and not, let me mind meld with them and get you the intel.
Yeah, but it's wartime.
Yeah, that's a reasonable point.
Yeah, that's one of the things they talked about on After Trek was that.
I mean, part of it is also there's a tone to the show that's a little bit more that he feels a little bit more energetic than he will 10 years later in Kirk's time.
Well, they bring it up on After Trek that the Admiral beams over and she's mind meld with this guy without asking for permission to mind meld. It's this is wartime. They do this they've done this before.
Yeah,
this is the procedure. 20% of the Federation is conquered.
You think they're a good cop, bad cop thing? Do you think there's an Adventures of Sarek and Cornwell novel in this?
I would read it.
I kind of think it'd be pretty cool actually. What else we got? Everybody gets up to speed real fast.
Yeah, so they have the little meeting around the table. They explain how dire the situation is. They're sending the detect Klingon intel.
Yeah.
To all the ships on the front lines, but it might not be enough.
Right.
So,
I was glad that they were okay, well, they can break the Klingon cloak. That's going to be pretty notable.
But Cornwell takes over the ship at this point, being the highest ranking officer, and it kind of becomes the Katrina Cornwell show, where she's basically in the captain role.
Is that her name?
Katrina? Yeah, Katrina.
Okay. Yeah, what's weird is while I was watching it, I was trying to remember what her first name was, couldn't remember it, and quick Googled it online, and it seemed like it was, just Admiral Cornwell or whatever was the credit I got or something, and it didn't have her name, her first name in it.
You know, I think Lorca called her Katrina, but
okay,
yeah, that is her name.
Okay,
and cool. I love how, one of the first things she did was shoot that bowl of fortune cookies. Fuck your fortune cookies,
right, it's
Lorca.
The very first thing that happens post-credits.
Yeah, after... You're post commercial.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was after she learned that Lorca was a Mirror Universe infiltrator.
Say goodbye to fortune cookies that the writers never quite knew what to do with.
Yeah, so just vaporize that and get it out of the show.
By the way, I was making a sandwich while this was happening, and I looked down once or twice, and I was like, she just shot something. I need to quick rewind and see what it is. I thought she'd killed the Tribble. I kind of caught a glimpse. It was small, and I saw the blast, and I was like, she killed the Tribble.
I do wonder who, adopted that Tribble now that Lorca's gone.
It's an interesting point. They need to answer that one in the opening of Season 2 when things are maybe a little more calm.
Well, the cool thing about the conversation they have after the cookies get evaporated is that... They talk about how this entire Mirror Universe situation has to be classified. This is one of the things I was wondering about. How will Kirk not know about the Mirror Universe?
Right.
And I had faith that the writers on this show will explain that, because they seem to really care about continuity.
My initial thought was, this notion of an entire universe of fascists, or at least a big chunk of them, is too dangerous for their foe or for their foes to know about, for really anybody to know about. But Sarek presents an interesting point in this one that All these people who've lost in the Federation, who've lost loved ones in this war, if they were to find out that they could go over to the Mirror Universe and there would be some version of counterpart to them, it's too dangerous a temptation. And I thought that was an interesting point as well that I hadn't thought of.
Yeah, and I actually like that more because anyone...
No, my idea was cooler.
Anyone who's an enemy of the Federation is going to be an enemy of the Terran Empire. It's not like you can go over there and team up with them.
You know, who knows what people might think they can pull off. Romulans are very sneaky.
Yeah, but I actually have a theory that in the Mirror Universe, all the Romulans got killed in the Earth-Romulan War. Because there's never been a Mirror Universe Romulan. That's never been seen.
That's interesting.
So...
but they did do a quick and, like, believable explanation for why this needs to be top secret. I think it's one of those things that was, like, really in the craw of some fans who are, like, canon and continuity are very important to them. And I know they're important to you, but...
Yeah,
I think you always had faith that the writers were not going to just leave this hanging.
Yeah. Yeah, I identify as a canonista.
Yeah.
I can no-prize it if I have to.
Right.
But yeah, these writers actually do a good job of tidying that stuff up.
They name-checked Enterprise for, what, at least second time this season in this very episode. So they definitely are...
Third time.
Yeah, they're definitely doing their research and seem to have a strong awareness. They were, of course, also referencing the Tholian web. Too, when they referenced that Enterprise, the Enterprise Mirror Universe stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think I still see a lot of resistance to it, and I think some of it was like, well, we haven't seen these Klingons that look like this, we haven't seen these Klingon ships that look like this.
Yeah, but they said from the beginning that they're gonna upgrade the visuals.
Right.
But they said, you know, it's totally prime universe, it's totally gonna fit in continuity.
I had some friends the other day, a friend online saying... I told you about this. Somebody was saying in another thread, hey, they're not in the Prime Universe. They've as much as said it on the show. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
But that,
I never got an answer out of him.
I think that person smokes weed and that's why they say silly things.
But another friend of mine said, like,
That's what cannabis does to you. Makes you say silly things.
Not even once, kids. Don't try the pots. Another friend of mine, the guy whose thread this was in, said, I guess I made the point of, like, the producers said it was the Prime Universe. They just outright have said it. And he's like, well, producers will lie on sometimes. And he mentioned something about Lost, which I don't think it was quite right on either. But anyway, it is possible the producers were lying. I don't think they were. I don't. At no point have I seen any major evidence for this not being the Prime Universe.
Yeah, I'm not willing to entertain this debate. I was done with this debate like a year ago.
Yeah.
So
I think a lot of it is just those visuals. They clearly are marking out some territory with their own visuals. Some of it will be explained. Some of it might not be. They may never explain the Klingon ships. They're just how they are now. But we don't know.
No. They've said that they are going to by. The later seasons, things will start to look more TOS-like.
You told me a magical vision of, like, D7 cruisers and Klingon unification and stuff, and the classic Klingons revisioned slightly with new their uniforms revisioned and with all the budget of, like, Discovery. And, like, I really want that to happen.
I think it could happen.
But if it never happened...
It was fine if it never happens.
I would still be able to work with it. And this was a big question we had at the very start of the show, was could we roll with it if this was just how things were?
Yeah. But this is like a topic we talked about like months ago.
All right, move on. All right.
Moving on with the recap. They decide at this point that they need to get the Discovery to Starbase 1.
Yep.
Which I always thought Starbase 1 was Space Dock from first seen in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
Yep.
Apparently it's not, though, because that was supposed to be, like, an Earth orbit, and they said Starbase 1 is 100 AUs from Earth.
Yeah.
Which is 100 astronomical units. That's the size of the Earth's orbit around the sun.
All right.
So, yeah, like, the diameter of that is AU. So 100 AUs away from Earth.
That's not super far.
It would be, like, outside of the solar system, but, yeah, it'd be, like, real close.
Yeah. Also, I never on Star Trek. I never assume that they know what they're talking about with measurements, even on the more modern shows. But anyway, it's their big base.
But they can't jump there because Stamets explains that they use all their spores in the Mirror Universe, mm-hmm. so they got to go at warp speed. And I thought they kind of, like, had written themselves an out where they could be like, well, this is why spore drive technology doesn't exist after Star Trek Discovery.
Right.
But as we'll later see, that's not the case. They do get to Starbase 1, and it turns out it has been conquered by the Klingon house D'Gor, which is a reference to Deep Space Nine. There is a Klingon named D'Gor, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So. And they straight up, like, graffitied it with their symbol and stuff.
Yeah. And the Klingons are apparently... There's a lot of infighting between the 24 houses. They're competing to see who can fuck up the Federation the most.
Right. For the Federation, it's terrible because it's, like, all these Klingons being hyper-aggressive simultaneously. Yeah. But it's not doing anything to you. Like, the Klingons are very fractious. It's not like their attack has a lot of planning to it. It seems like it's just everybody, every man for himself.
It's basically like Klingon, like, dick-waving, pissing contest.
Yep.
Trying to see who can blow up the most Federation planets.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not keeping in with what T'Kuvma's vision of a unified empire was.
Right.
It's something that Cornwell brings up to Laurel. You know, the two of them have a little bit of history. They met when...
Yeah, I had forgotten that until she started talking to her, and she said something like, I consider you not an equal, but she said something like that, or like
There's a mutual respect.
Right, yeah, and I was like, oh, right, right. And because, yeah, they, like, tried to escape together
They have very different values and motivations, but, like, I think they like, respect each other's convictions.
Right, and bonded at least a little bit under their duress.
Yeah, they're both like, this guy Cole is an asshole.
Yeah.
But even though, and if you think about it, looking back retroactively, Laurel was trying to manipulate Cornwell. She was trying to use her to get on the Discovery to get to her sleeper agent, Vok.
Right, like she may have never had any good intentions for her.
Yeah, but Laurel, I guess, does provide, like, a little bit of help, a little bit of insight, because...
And depending on how things play out with Ash, she's also helped them in that case. At the very least, she resolved his immediate distress. I would not trust her at all as to, like... I would assume that she would have just exorcised Ash and left Vok and been, like... Whispered to him, like, Vok, pretend like you're Ash.
Maybe that'll happen next week.
Maybe so.
I'm pretty sure Laurel's gonna die next week. Because I don't think they're gonna, keep her on the ship as an ally.
You don't think she's gonna go and, like, unite the houses or something?
Well... Okay, the three Star Trek Discovery actors that are signed on to appear at Star Trek Las Vegas in August are Jason Isaacs, Wilson Cruz,
and her.
Both of them have dead characters, and then Mary Chifo, who plays Laurel.
Yeah, I don't like bringing in that stuff. That takes out the fun of it. Bringing in your real world meta stuff. I'm talking about, like, the show's plot. I feel like...
I can't unknow it, though.
Yeah.
I looked at the Star Trek Las Vegas guest list and saw that.
You're a big cheater. it doesn't mean she couldn't quick unite the houses and then die. Or die uniting them in some dramatic way.
But while they're getting some help from Laurel, they also get some help from Emperor Georgiou.
Yes.
Who, in her universe, the Terrans had defeated the Klingons. And she explains, you know, the Klingons are like a cancer. You gotta, like, remove the tumor, which was a very metaphorical way of saying you have to go and attack Kronos.
Right. She attacked it so hard that it became part of her title, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, the
universe.
The Dominus of Kronos.
Yeah. That's where they drop their Enterprise reference. They're like, because they decide that they maybe need to go there and chart it for just such an attack. And they're like, nobody's been here since, Admiral Archer?
Captain Archer.
I can't remember what he became afterwards. Well,
he eventually became president of the Federation, but...
Oh, shit.
I guess he was an admiral, too, at one point, if you believe Star Trek 09. But the idea is to get the Discovery where it can jump again, jump to one of the caves, and Kronos is full of caves, apparently, right. So you can jump...
Is that a new thing, kind of?
Yeah.
Whenever they go there, they always do seem to be in underground rocky chambers, but it sounds like that. I guess they're expanding on it in Discovery. The notion of warping or whatever, or spore driving into a cave with a starship is insane, but kind of cool too. It feels a little Star Trek 09 as far as conceptually.
I thought it felt like the Pegasus on the Next Generation, which had the, like, interphasic cloaking device, and it went inside of an asteroid. It was in a cave inside of an asteroid.
I can't remember this, but that sounds cool. Anyway, I like it as a plot point. It's a cool notion.
And so, like, even though, like, I thought, I guess we're done with the spore drive, they're like, nope, we can go make more spores, because they had that one spore plant, which is the plant from the opening credits.
Yes. We continue to find things that are very clearly in the opening credits were, like, seeded in there that are occurring throughout this season. And we're thinking about maybe doing a little short episode later on where we kind of, we'll go through and we'll dissect the credits.
Yeah, and after the season, we'll try to figure out what every image in the credit means, because the
there's at least, like, three really, or four that we've identified.
Yeah, we caught the tether.
Yeah, the tether, the mycelium, I forget what the other things were. I think there's at least a few others.
Well, next week's episode is called Will You Take My Hand?
Right.
You see the two hands in the credits where they almost
touch.
But
they don't quite make it.
There's actually something that you pointed out, like, when we watched the very, very first episode.
Uh-huh.
You're like, what's up with these hands not touching?
Yeah. It seems weirdly, like, yeah, you would think Star Trek would always run with the grasping hands, friendship, whatever. Mm-hmm.
This is friendship denied.
Yeah, or was that something that wasn't like a thing that happened like in like Zero G with like in the Battle of the Binary Stars episode or something? Was it?
No.
Okay, I need to rewatch those episodes just to kind of get my head around some of it, especially in knowing what we know now and all that.
I like those episodes a lot more now.
It sounds like we're about to potentially see what that image means in the opening credits. We'll find out.
We only have one more episode for them to explain it to us.
I mean, assuming that they were trying to get it all out in the first season, which I would kind of think they were, they're not going to seed three seasons worth.
No, those credits are going to be totally different next year. I'm calling it now.
Oh, really? But, interesting.
I mean, it's going to have like different images and stuff.
And then people are going to speculate the shit out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, after what they were doing now, yeah, we'll be all trying to figure out what every little thing means.
Yeah. I've seen that kind of, you know, that reminds me when DC was doing, what was it that had Rip Hunter and the board of all his weird visions of the future?
Oh, that was in New 52.
Yeah, yeah, his glimpses of the New 52 or whatever.
Yeah. And then Bendis did, like, the same thing in some Marvel comic, where those are, like, where Age of Ultron came from.
Right, somebody had crazy visions and, like, had scrawled it on a blackboard.
Yeah, was it, like, Nick Fury during Secret Invasion?
I think so. Yeah. And you were like, oh, you, the readers, can look at all this scrawl that's on there that are somebody's psychic predictions or premonitions or whatever, and you can try and, like, puzzle them together. I think, arguably, DC did a better job of it than Bendis did later, but... But it's a technique. It's what's interesting is that they didn't call attention to it. I think we noticed that there was some images in there that, like, well, that just didn't make it, like, an immediate amount of sense. Like, it wasn't just the spore drive and the ship and Burnham and...
When they established that Burnham and Tyler, when they were in the Mirror Universe, that they were, like, the tether for each other.
Yeah.
That was when you were like, hey, there's a tether in the opening credits hooking on to something. I think that might be intentional.
Yeah. Yeah, and now I'm increasingly feeling that, like, every single thing in there is intentional.
I like the opening theme music. I think it's very appropriate for Star Trek, but I didn't really like the credits themselves, the visuals.
Yeah.
I wish they would have done something like Star Trek Voyager had the best opening credits. I just wanted to see, like, a ship flying around in space. Especially after the much-hated Enterprise credits in the last Star Trek show.
It's been a long road.
We're not doing that again. But...
Again from the... Dear...
Stop. So, I do like those credits now that I'm seeing there was a plan to those visuals.
Right. It's almost an expansion on, you know, we know that there's some Game of Thrones influence. It's almost like the Game of Thrones map that, you know, will reflect elements of the show. But at a larger scale, it's a more ambitious version of it.
Yeah, and it's covert. It's like, they're like...
Yeah.
They by no means
said, hey fans, you're going to want to watch these opening credits for some hints of what's to come.
Yeah.
But I think we've now seen enough evidence to think that's probably exactly what was going on. There's no way you could guess what that tether would mean, but it's kind of neat. It's really pretty cool.
Yeah, there's definitely a plan to that.
Yeah.
But speaking of plans...
Yes.
The Discovery crew, under Admiral Cornwell's leadership, comes up with a plan to take Stamets's one spore plant that he has, go to this moon that is a lifeless moon. And he said, you know, we had this plan, me and my colleague Strahl, where we could grow a bunch of mycelium.
Was that his colleague who was on the destroyed ship?
Yeah, on the Glen.
Yeah.
And so they go off and set up all these probes that they shoot out of the Discovery that land there, and they grow a whole bunch of mushrooms.
It was like the Genesis planet if the Genesis planet only produced mushrooms.
So if you're like me and you thought that the Discovery is just going to be done with the spore drive after last week, I guess we were wrong. It's like the spore drive is sticking around for a little bit.
Dumb bastard.
So I wouldn't be surprised if we still have a spore drive in Season 2.
Yeah.
But I would encourage everyone not to freak out about that, because eventually they will have... I promise you, they will have an explanation for why the spore drive doesn't exist beyond this show.
Yes. They would have to be complete idiots to have not thought of that, and they are clearly not going to go that... the Cylons have a plan. Oh, we don't know what the plan is. Because we've already seen there's so much planning that goes into this show that they clearly are thinking about these things ahead of time.
Yeah, especially like these more recent episodes. It's become very apparent.
A lot of stuff has come to fruition. Stuff going back to the very earliest episodes, yeah. Like Lorca's low-light vision thing.
Yeah, so like while we're on this subject, I do want to bring up that we see like a whole bunch of character arcs in Season 1.
Mm-hmm.
Like with Saru being the the captain and the leader, who kind of ceased to be in this episode with Cornwell on board. But we don't know how temporary that situation is.
Mm-hmm. And it did bug me that was not discussed at least a little bit between Saru and somebody. I kind of wanted to see them at least address it. Like, you know what I want to
say? He's a very by the book guy, so he's not like when an admiral comes around. Of course, he's going to be like, "Yeah, I relinquish authority.
We know
you're in command."
We know he was envious of Burnham. We know that that's a thing for him. He had, like, it feels like it would be, like, stomping on a little bit. Burnham's not in a state to ask him, but I kind of wish, like, Tilly or somebody said, hey, you know, like, I could, you know, you did say, I kind of wanted a little bit of post-mortem on the previous episode. Like, I don't know, like, if I, you know, I know you don't want to just have characters sitting around chatting, but a little bit of post-mirror universe reflection, unfortunately, I mean, this is all kind of like, they got to deal with their situation, but...
Mirrors are good for reflection.
That's deep. If Tilly had said, "Sorry, you like you did an amazing job back there. I can't believe you pulled our fat out of the fire, and like we survived that, and we did it because of you. And now this admiral thinks she's going to come in and take your ship away." And then he would say, "Well, I'm disappointed too, but we, you know, in a wartime situation, she obviously supersedes me." And he would become that by the book guy. We know he can be. I just wanted
to They never have that conversation on any show when an admiral shows up and starts barking orders. It's just like, yeah, like an admiral comes by, they're in command.
Yeah, but like when they had just completed a character arc about him gaining the confidence he needed to really do the captaincy right, that's why I think they it begs the question.
But about that arc itself, you know, if you go back to like the very first episode, there's one quick moment where Captain Georgiou and First Officer Burnham are having a conversation in the ready room, I believe, and Saru is on the bridge, and people are asking him, you know, what should we do with, like, this weird anomaly we found in space? And he looks, like, very, like, uncertain and doesn't know what to say when he's sitting in the captain's chair.
Yeah.
And then when either Burnham or Georgiou or both, like, walk onto the bridge, he's, like, relieved that there's someone to, like, take over. And so he's definitely, like, grown a lot. We saw him where he was...
He was probably a very good follower, but by no means a leader.
When Lorca was captured and he had to be in command by himself, that was when he was trying to look up all the previous highly recognized Starfleet captains.
Right,
they had Archer and Robert April and Pike and Georgiou herself. And by the end of that episode, he's like, I don't need an evaluation from the computer. I know how I did. And so we did see him. So that was an arc that was planned out from the very first episode.
Yeah. He, Burnham, and Tilly, I think, had the primary arcs. Lorca, obviously.
Yeah.
But, like, that's a lot to juggle in one season, is, like, notable, distinct arcs for that many characters. So it's really very impressive.
And to talk about Tilly for a little bit, to tie back into the recap that we're doing, when she was first introduced in episode 3, mm-hmm. She didn't want to be associated with the mutineer Michael Burnham. She didn't want to, like, work next to her. She was, like, ashamed to be her roommate. Mm-hmm. And in this episode where we see Ash Tyler, you know, kind of scared that he's this pariah, how am I going to face people on the ship?
Yeah.
When he's in the mess hall and he sits down by himself, Tilly's the first person to stand up. Right,
everybody hushes, and everybody's kind of like, yeah.
And Tilly's the first one to, like, go and, like, sit next to him and try to comfort him. Mm-hmm. And there's also an arc that you could say Kayla Detmer went through.
Yeah. Because
that almost exact same scene happened in episode 3 when Burnham comes on the Discovery.
Yeah.
And Kayla Detmer is giving her the stink eye.
What's interesting is that that's all done purely visually, since Detmer gets almost no lines in the show.
But she had a line this week.
Yeah. And I suspect, you know, season 2 we'll see more of her and the rest of the Bridge crew. But yeah, that was cool. That's a good point, and I hadn't thought about it, that she got a little micro arc.
And Stamets himself has gone through an arc. It's been kind of inconsistent.
Right.
Where he started off as like the gruff asshole.
Right. And he was, of course, under duress from Lorca and under a lot of pressure.
And then he became like the hippy-dippy mushroom guy.
Right.
And it was interesting to see him confront Ash in this episode, because he...
He killed the love of his life. Ash killed the love of his life. And, reasonably speaking, Ash can't be blamed for it. Arguably, they don't know 100% certain that Vok is excised from him and all that, but they're making out that, you know, no Vok brain patterns, that's what they said. So on the science level, they probably think he's gone. But there's no way emotionally that Stamets was going to be able to say, hey, I'm going through some tough times, but all's forgiven, pal. Like, there was just no way, and so he...
You have to address that.
He gave him a... He acknowledged him. He, like, did not do a, I hate you and I'll always hate you, but he said something that was pretty tough to him, pretty harsh. Where he said, like, maybe you're human after all, if you can realize how horrible, like, what you did was... It was a good, tough, painful conversation.
And then, speaking of tough, painful conversations,
right?
This whole episode, Burnham has been worried about, she thinks that she cannot talk to Ash Tyler again. Mm-hmm. It starts off, at the very beginning of the episode, Saru is like, yeah, you should probably go talk to him, you know, it might help with his recovery. She doesn't want to do it. Then, she has a conversation with Sarek, where...
Sarek,
enough,
of all people.
Yeah, of all people, he's the one who tells her to choose love.
Right, he says, don't be, like, ashamed for falling in love or something like that.
Yeah, and he's very Vulcan about, like,
it is reasonable that he would say that, because any number of times the various shows and movies, including the 09 movie, have made the point that he really truly does love Amanda.
Yeah.
And he was willing to, I think, kind of break some Vulcan taboos for it. And there is a part of him that, as much as he seems like the icier version of Spock at times, that will allow for some emotion to run through him, like love is too powerful for him to ignore it.
No, that's like his one emotional vice is his love. His love for his wife.
He loves that shit.
But yeah, and I thought, like, the way he delivered it, where everything's kind of veiled and he can't be like outright showing any emotion. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of coded. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very consistent with what we know of Sarek. And then we also see Burnham confide in Tilly a little bit.
Yeah, that was a really interesting scene, because Burnham, although not... with the exception of how do you ask somebody out sequence in the Harry Mudd episode, has generally been the mentor to Tilly. But here she was, like, saying, am I going to see my dad again, basically? She's like, she was worried about the tone of Sarek took, that he was saying goodbye.
Yeah. And I wasn't really sure what to make of that. I don't want to put too much thought into that yet, because I think that might be tying into something in the next episode that I'm not sure how to speculate on it yet. So.
Okay.
But, you know, she also talks to her about Ash, though, about, you know, I don't feel like I can face him, and she tells him, like, you know, he probably doesn't have any future. He's going to go to prison or go to a laboratory or, you know, he's probably going to be studied or rehabilitated and, like, sent through, like, all this therapy.
He'll never be flying ships again, or, you know...
Yeah, he'll never fly for Starfleet, because which is kind of silly, because he's not a pilot. But
yeah, he'll never work for Starfleet, is what she kind of basically meant.
We have seen him pilot a shuttlecraft.
But I guess she meant he will never fly on... It'd be like he will never sail again on a ship working on an aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
But yeah, and Tilly is very much taken up his cause, and she said something interesting to Burnham. She said, even if you just need to see him and say you can't see him again or whatever, or it's over, then he still needs that closure that you need to talk to
him. That's actually good relationship advice. You should always... seek closure.
Yeah, don't ghost on him.
Yeah.
Jeez, Burnham. What are you, some millennial?
So, she does go to talk to him, and I thought it was, like, a pretty well-acted scene, and it subverted my expectations, where she's actually like, yeah, I'm not going to be able to do this anymore. It's over.
Right. what I was thinking, and we talked about this off mic, is that Burnham is kind of, I think, although it is emotionally difficult and not, like, maybe not, it feels like, you kind of, I think, aptly pointed out that, you know, you don't want to quite fall into a will-they-won't-they trope. That would be the worst thing, and I don't think they'll do it, but I feel like Burnham is kind of in the right to not jump back into this, even as a sort of caretaker for him or just a friend. On a logical level, they haven't really fully vetted him yet. I don't think that's as important to the show, to, like, make sure he's not part Vok, make sure he's okay. And certainly on an emotional level, she points out that, like, she saw him try and kill her, you know? And she makes these somewhat unfair argument, like, you said you would tell me if you couldn't handle things, and then you became Vok. And I'm like, well, I don't think that's, like, a normal, like, I can't handle our relationship kind of problem. That's I was programmed, you know? Or, like, he can't take that one. But her feeling about it makes complete emotional sense, and especially the kind of PTSD, relationship PTSD she would have after, like, seeing this guy, the only person she'd ever emotionally been vulnerable with, try to kill her. Like, that's just too much. You know?
When you put it like that, I think you might have convinced me to be more okay with this, because one of my problems was I didn't want to see her made into, like, this victim. Like they use this trope in TV a lot where, like, a woman is assaulted and then, like, this strong heroic character becomes, like, this, like, super weak character.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to see that with her. But the way that you explained that, I was like, yeah, this was, like, her first ever romantic experience.
Yeah.
And for it to, like, unfold the way it did, like, yeah, that would probably scare someone away and be like, no, I can't handle this.
Right,
this is too much. Oh, this is too much at one time. I can't do it. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah. I mean, she did also just confront a person whose death she caused in the Prime universe and save that person. She got a lot of shit going on, okay? Ash, leave her alone.
And the scene.
But by the way, the actor playing Ash did a great job. They both did a great job in this scene. But he, like, I want to believe him that he is not, that the Vok is gone, because he really did seem like a guy who he's like, when he said he needed her to, like, recover, to, like, to be anything.
Yeah, I was about to bring that up.
It's like he really sold it.
Yeah, and I was disappointed when I was like, are they just going to end the Vok stuff? I liked Vok more as a concept, as an idea, more than Ash Tyler. I was hoping for some type of payoff with that. But now, I was thinking eventually, like, yeah, Ash Tyler is just a tragic lie that turns out, like, he's going to just fade away and Vok will revert back to Vok.
She outright said, was there ever a real Ash Tyler in this too?
But after this episode, I'm starting to like Ash Tyler more. And I kind of want him to stick around.
I always liked him more than Vok. I thought that actor did a good job with the character. He was easy to like as kind of a rebellious prisoner.
He's kind of too easy to like, and that's why I didn't like
that. That's true. I do think you're right about that. He was maybe a little too easy to like. But
he seemed too good to be true, and it's like, well, because he probably is too good to be true, and he's actually a Klingon infiltrator.
Right. I wonder what his future is going to be. Is he going to sacrifice himself on the next episode?
I was thinking that's a possibility.
He has not a lot to live for, and at least at the moment, Burnham has, like, said, I can't do this.
And that would be, like, a redemption thing after killing Dr. Culber, would be if he did sacrifice himself.
Yeah. It'd be a shame. I like the actor, and I feel like... What was interesting is he did represent a guy who had PTSD before, and now... it would make sense for him to have additional PTSD to the point where, like, he probably should be in a hospital for a good long time with people helping him and not meeting the demands of a story where he has to, you know, have drama each week. So that it does seem like a dramatic, real dramatic possibility. I thought it was interesting when Burnham left, just to assuage his pain a little bit, she said, so, you know, like, this was a hard, this is hard. It's like she was saying, like, I don't want to do this, you know, but I have to do this.
Yeah.
It's the closest she got to saying, like, I do still care about you.
But it was kind of cold the way that when he said, you know, the only reason why I didn't become this Klingon sleeper agent and try to take over Discovery was because of my love for you. That's the only thing that kept me Ash.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, without you, I don't have anything. And Burnham basically just says... Well, you know, after my court-martial, after the war started, I thought I didn't have anything to ever live for, and, you know, I got over it, so you'll get over it, too.
Yeah, she wasn't real high on empathy at that moment,
yeah.
Or she couldn't summon it anyway. Do you generally think of Burnham as having a high degree of empathy or average degree? I don't feel like she shows it a lot. She can be a little bit like Spock, a little bit icy.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, she was concerned about, you know, watching Giorgio again, but that's also kind of like a self-centered thing. Like, right. She didn't want to,
you know,
feel that guilt again.
Once she started becoming friends with Tilly, she was kind of encouraging her and telling her she was going to make captain and trying to, like, she's like, I'm gonna drill you and I'm going to make it, help you get
when
there.
When they're going for jogs on the ship in their cool disco shirts.
Yeah.
Available at the StarTrek.com store.
Damn, you shill. If only we were getting paid, right?
Yeah, CBS, you should pay me for that.
But, I don't think she's, like, by any means light on empathy, but she just has a little bit of that Vulcan distance sometimes. But, yeah, that was a kind of harsh one. Again, I feel it's believable as far as, like, relationship dynamics that even a person who does have a good supply of empathy in that moment might not be able to summon it.
Yeah. Well, I kind of feel better about... And I always thought the scene was well done. I had some issues with it, but after, like, talking about it with you, I think I like that more. So I'm glad I
could help.
I don't have as many issues with this episode as I thought I had. But I guess we should just talk about the way the episode ended, which
right?
I do have an issue with this, is basically Admiral Cornwell presents Emperor Giorgio disguised as Captain Giorgio. Says that, well, it turns out that Captain Giorgio never died. She was on a Klingon ship, and she has gathered Klingon intelligence, and now she's going to command the Discovery on this mission to Kronos.
Yeah. This was a plan somewhat hatched by Sarek when Sarek spoke to her, right?
I don't think so, because he was just, like, saying, like, yeah, this mission is going to be super important. You know, maybe it was, but they didn't actually show that on screen.
Yeah, but the vibe I got was that he took the... She said that she told Sarek, just doing this surveying is not going to be enough. And then Sarek was like, go on.
Okay, yeah.
And then the next thing you know, this plan gets hatched. We didn't see it happen, but I think Sarek was the middleman on it. And that's a little bit crazy, but... she is taking over, and they have presented her to the crew as real Georgia, which is crazy. It is one of those things, like, sometimes a minor complaint I've had about the show is that occasionally dramatic things will happen, and I'm like, they kind of slightly forced that square peg into a round hole, because they wanted a dramatic turn. This was a very dramatic turn, not 100% sure if it made sense that... but they are in desperate times, and this chick did blow up like Kronos in her,
yeah.
Or her mirror universe. So maybe I almost need to see more of how it plays out. Like, what does Admiral Cornwell think she's gonna do? Did she say what exactly they're gonna do?
No, and I feel like this is too much like Star Trek Into Darkness, where, like, spoiler for Star Trek Into Darkness. Admiral Marcus is like, yo, I need Khan from the 20th century to help me plan how to fight the Klingons because of his savagery.
Right.
And that's why this guy from 300 years ago...
We're all
ago,
too soft now. We need a savage from the apocalyptic wars.
And it would make more sense with, like, this shady Section 31 badmiral.
Yeah.
It makes less sense with Admiral Cornwell, even though, you know, desperate times call for desperate measures. But...
Right. I guess, I mean, she had broadly approved of, much of what Lorca had done, kind of black opsy dangerous stuff. She did think that he was getting a little too crazy, putting himself out in danger, and was threatening to shut him down. But she, I guess, is a person who's overseen some risky stuff from the Federation.
But my biggest problem with this is that the Discovery crew isn't being told that that is the Mirror Universe version of Georgiou, which I think makes absolutely no sense when you're expecting this entire ship of, I think it's 140 people.
Yeah.
And, like, okay, no one can talk about the Mirror Universe that they clearly all know about. They were having to wear different uniforms and shit in the previous couple of episodes. So, like, okay...
I think there were a couple guys that they're like, we don't have enough replicator juice or whatever to do it. It's like guys in the lower decks are just wearing their normal stuff. They're just like, well, if they come, quick, get out of the way of the view screens.
Was that a woman doing maintenance who found Dr. Kolber's dead body? Did she have a... I don't think she
had... Like an evil maintenance uniform?
I don't think she did, so you might be right.
Yeah.
But...
I need to know her story.
But the point is, you're gonna ask these 140 people to keep all that secret, but you're not gonna trust them with this other bit of information?
Yeah. Also, well, it could be... okay, so the argument for it is crew cohesion. That the morale of the crew, which could be vital... would be so bolstered by having this really pretty legendary captain suddenly return from the dead to take them on this vital mission. And they're like, oh, shit. This is going to be amazing. If they know that, like, oh, also she was the emperor of an evil, fascist, racist, xenophobic organization in her universe that regularly tortured and did horrible things. By the way, a good reason not to put her in command of the Discovery, I would say. But... I'm hoping, like, Cornwell has, like, a contingency. Like, we put one of those things in you that, like, a Suicide Squad style that'll blow up if you try anything.
Oh, yeah, she just goes all Amanda Waller.
I feel like you want to have a contingency plan when you put the Emperor of Evil in command of your ship.
And here's another thing, is that I don't know if the people besides... Burnham and Saru on the Discovery know that Georgiou was the emperor in the Mirror Universe, because originally they were like, well, it's a faceless emperor that I guess, like, people outside of the Terran military haven't seen.
Yeah.
And they never show her, like, on the Discovery view screen, except possibly when they go to
the
palace.
When they bomb the planet?
When they go to the palace ship, and Michael Burnham is talking to Saru and says, you know, I'm where I belong.
Right.
You know, I'm in my place, letting him know that, yeah, we're going to go and destroy the ship. No, when she bombed the planet, she was talking to the Shinjo on the view screen.
Okay.
That wasn't the Discovery.
Yeah.
I don't know if she was visible when, like, Saru and Lorca had that Skype call on the view screen.
Right.
If she was, then these people...
You probably would have, rumor mill alone would have probably gotten that through to everybody.
So, I'll have to go back and check that,
I believe the intent of the writers is that they generally don't know.
Yeah.
Because it looks like there was Detmer notably smiled like, Yay,
Captain Georgiou's back. She's like the best boss I ever worked for.
Yep. You know what I think would be funny is if when they say that she's gonna be commanding it, at that point Saru should have been like, I am never gonna get this fucking command.
I think right now he's more worried about her eating him.
Yeah. Well, it would suck that the person whose first move when they came on board the ship like a day before was to point a phaser at you and talk about how they had killed and eaten your kind previously and you should kneel was like suddenly turned into your captain about like 24 hours later. And that's exactly what happened to him.
But and I will say this, and I say this pretty much every time I have a criticism of the show, and there's been a benefit into going into it with this philosophy, is that I will wait and see what happens, because next week they might explain some of the stuff in more detail and it will make more sense, and I'll be like, oh yeah, I didn't need to worry about that. It actually was going to work out and be okay. So.
Let's condemn the show and say that it's killed Star Trek instead. I think it's this is ruined Star Trek.
Yeah.
They would the Federation would never do what they've shown. It's not the Star Trek I used to know, Fathery.
Well, that's been true since the Next Generation for some people, but
yeah, that's kind of true.
No, the people who bitch about whatever the latest Star Trek show is, normally, like, 10 years later, they'll say that they like it, and whatever's, like, the new one is, like, the one that they don't like.
Yeah. Every once in a while...
That's a small vocal minority.
Every once in a while, I've been that person. The 09 Trek, some of my antipathy for it at the time led me to go back and start rewatching more Next Generation Voyager and stuff like that. Now, I even softened a little bit on the 09 stuff, but... Yeah.
No, I think it's a lot better than you give it credit for. Yeah. I still have some issues with it, but...
What, 09?
Yeah, I think it's a good movie.
It... Yeah. Okay. We haven't talked about it.
I think when we revisit it...
At some point, yeah, it'll be an interesting conversation.
We'll talk about it on Text Trek eventually, and I think when you watch it again, you'll be like, yeah, you know what, like, that actually isn't bad.
No, here's the thing. I agree on like, as filmmaking, I think it's good... I do think it has a few things in it that I consider like one of those Trek fans' fundamental betrayals of what Star Trek is all about.
I think it is, in some ways, one of the most accurate returns to the original series. But again, like this is for another time.
Another time. Yeah. But just a little preview of the arguing that will be had in another couple months.
No, I think I'll be able to convince you on it. You convinced me on that Burnham and Tyler scene.
Yeah. Okay.
Anything else about this episode?
I'm going to quick look at my notes and see if there's anything else I had on here. Okay.
While you're looking at that, there's this one thing I'm going to point out. I loved the scene between Sarek and Giorgio.
One of the things I was going to bring up.
Where they're arguing about who raised the better Michael Burnham.
Yeah, she's kind of trying to like say, like, well, you kind of screwed up in your universe, didn't you? You know? And then he like points out... Well, she did bring down your whole fucking empire.
Yeah,
she didn't say it in those words,
knew not to fall for Lorca, whereas your Burnham did not know that.
Yeah.
Look what happened after that. It's like people who are parents put a lot of pride in that, and I guess, like, that can invite competition.
Yeah, Sarek finally got to do that a little bit.
Be proud of a kid.
Right, yeah.
Instead of disappointed.
He's not great at it.
He's normally disappointed in the kids he raised, but...
Here's a quick question. Did Burnham... had she actually said that she loved Ash prior to this episode? I was just trying to recall. Did she actually use the L word? I don't think she had.
They might have when they were in the mirror universe, but...
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, she only was able to say it in retrospect, which is interesting, and also I think fits with her relative inexperience, and... But I didn't know, it kind of jumped out at me. I was like, well, did she just say she loved him? He definitely said he loved her, but I'm like, did she say it? She did, I think. But anyway, I had here a note that it was kind of an awkward time to have confessed that she loved him. And I don't know, maybe it was in another scene. I was trying to remember what scene it was where she said it. Maybe she said it to somebody else. This was one thing that I just noticed on a sort of general level. It was a little weird seeing the Discovery without Lorca in command. Arguably, they've been going through captains... they went through three captains in this episode alone to replace him. but it was interesting to see them definitely, like... Without him, it felt more classic Star Trek. You know, more traditional Federation, even though they're doing some crazy tactics, and they betrayed the Federation's ideals and completely ruined Star Trek forever. But other than that, it felt pretty Star Trek and Federation-y. But it's going to be a little bit of an interesting adjustment to just see it without him in command. We've gotten used to it for every single other episode of the season. Well, almost every single episode.
But I think, like, seeing that moment in the mess hall where, like, the entire crew, like, they're not going to treat Tyler like the pariah. Like, they kind of, like, all, like, gather around to support him.
Yeah.
I think that's part of, you know, like, this planned arc. Of where, like, they certainly didn't treat Burnham like that back in episode 3.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, yeah, the idea was to, like, show things, you know, become more, like, traditional
Star
Trek.
The crew had to kind of earn their coming together in this. And it makes complete sense. They were part of a forced paranoid environment, you know. They were in wartime. Lorca was doing shady stuff. We now know that he was even shadier than we thought he was, you know, and so, that the notion that the crew would be a little bit paranoid, we know they were, like, scientists kind of not doing what they wanted
to
do.
They were scientists originally, and the Dworka kind of turned them into a warship.
Yeah. So I felt like those...
Saru brought them together as, like, a true Starfleet ship and crew.
Yep. He should have hugged them with his gang, threat ganglia.
Yeah, just, like, grows out really long and hugs everyone. I would not want to be hugged by that man's gangula.
Well, if you are xenophobic like that, then
I would rather eat him.
That's all the notes I have, by the way. Like, I think I broadly agree. A few issues with the episode, but still a lot of good, really, really interesting stuff happened in it. And some of the complaints, I'm going to need to see how it plays out before they kind of register as full complaints.
Yeah. And that's the same way I am. I'm hoping that some of this stuff gets explained next week. The show does have a tendency to resolve some of my initial problems. Overall, there's still been more that I love than more that I'm iffy on. So I'm still enjoying the show. My concern now going into next week's episode, which I'm expecting is going to be like a big season finale. You know, they've done this. They did this with episode 9, where they had the mid-season finale. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of did it last week, where they had the end of the Mirror Universe mini arc, mm-hmm. where they did like this big, spectacle, heavy-hitting stuff, major event episode.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of thinking they might do that again for the season finale.
Yeah.
At least I would kind of hope they would.
But it's also going to be weird because it's going to be two giant action episodes close to back-to-back.
And my concern is that it won't live up to what we saw last week. I loved the Mirror Universe arc so much, and I like that more than the Klingon War arc, and it's going to be hard to live up to that.
You know, I posted about the how crazy the episode was on Facebook just to talk about all those holy shit moments that we were talking about last week. And several, like, all my friends who chimed in who'd seen it were like, oh my god, that episode freaked me out, oh my god. They were just like, this one person said he thought it was like maybe the best single episode of Trek he'd ever seen. I know this guy about my age and who was raised on TOS. That they would have a lot to live up to. That episode, pretty much everybody I know who saw it was kind of blown away by it.
But if the worst case scenario is, well, episode 13 of the season was so great and the season finale wasn't near as good, I mean, that's still not that bad of a scenario.
Right.
So I will always be thankful for this season of Star Trek Discovery for that fantastic Mirror Universe arc.
Yep.
I love that. And yeah, I would rank that pretty high.
They may subvert our expectations, and it may not be like... Like, broadly what it looks like is they're going to go to the Klingon homeworld, they're going to do this cool scan in the cave, maybe. I don't know if that's still part of the plan. And then... Presumably, Emperor Georgiou had some notion of this just going to like decimate the shit out of them, out of Kronos. I don't know that it's going to go down the way any of that is going to exactly happen the way we think it is. I'm not going to assume it is.
Or what if Cornwell has like this other plan, and Georgiou thinks that she's going to be able to like I don't know, kill a bunch of Klingons and maybe like rebuild her empire or something? Right. But it's like, oh no, you're just like a
she's
pawn.
Sell them out. Yeah,
yeah, you were a pawn in Cornwell's plan.
And I forgot to really mention this during the episode. I really like the actress playing Cornwell. I was glad to see her back in spite of Saru having to step to the side. She's super cool, and I think it would be awesome if it turns out she was two steps ahead.
Yeah.
Even that she like had like told Burnham about this and like they had hatched this plan together. We just don't know it yet as the audience. And Burnham's like, what? And that's like an act.
Oh, yeah, because it looks like there's going to be a lot of tension with Saru and Burnham knowing that this is the fake Georgiou.
Yeah, it would be very interesting if they were all in on it. I am not going to assume that's the case because I could be setting myself up for disappointment there, but it would be cool.
Yeah, no, that would definitely be cool, and I would love to see that. And we will find out next week. This was the last episode of Star Trek Discovery Season 1. That is not the last episode of Star Trek Discovery Season 1.
I don't even know what that meant. that was a Zen Cohen thing there.
It means that after this we have the finale, and then at least a year-long wait to get more Star Trek. Yeah, so
we just go and we weep quietly.
I am sad that in 2018 we only get 6 episodes of Star Trek. but that's more than we got in 2006 through 2016.
Combined?
So, combined.
Yeah.
Which was a big fat zero.
Yep.
For a decade.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't complain too much. It's an
embarrassment of riches. Just start watching the Orville, damn it.
I've watched half of the Orville. I don't have much desire to watch the second half.
I know. But in your desperation, you'll come crawling back.
I'm actually rewatching. I just watched the first two seasons of TOS, like within like the last 2 weeks.
There is a lot of material to work with.
I'm halfway through season 3 of TOS again,
and we're gonna go and talk about more of the movies too.
Yeah. But we'll be talking about next week's episode of Star Trek Discovery, and then we have plenty of stuff planned out for the rest of the year until Discovery returns. So there's gonna be a lot of Tech Trek content rolling out.
Yeah, don't panic.
Real quick, just want to point out, if you haven't checked out our previous podcast, it was about the Star Trek cruise that I attended. So Dave asked me what exactly was going on, and I tried to go into as much detail as possible about some of the things taking place on the Star Trek cruise. If you like that, also check out the video that we have on YouTube now. That's going to be kind of a just little sizzle reel of
a visual
just
some, tour yeah. of what you of the just, highlight reel of what you saw.
Yeah, just a quick little montage of the fun and excitement of Star Trek: The Cruise 2018. And that's all we got. We'll be back next week to talk about the Star Trek Discovery season finale. Will You Take My Hand? And until then, live long and prosper, y'all. Thank all of you so much for checking out this installment of Tech Trek. I hope you enjoyed it. Please be sure to like our YouTube videos and subscribe to our channel. Audio-only versions of episodes are available at our website, www.tech-trek.com. Please check out our site, especially if you just want an audio-only podcast. We have that available for you. Y'all can also keep up with us online. You can follow us on Twitter, at TXTrek, or you can check us out on Facebook at www.facebook.com/tex-trek. Please, by all means, let us know what you think by dropping a comment anywhere you see fit. We definitely want to hear your feedback. Let us know what you liked and what you would like to see more of, what you would like to see differently going forward. If you want to email me directly, go ahead. I can be reached at fatheryactual@tex-trek.com. Thank all y'all again. Take care.